Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, I'm wishing you the best. If you take a look at our website at naturalnurse.com and slide over to calendar, you will see the amazing array of classes and workshops that we have available, including classes that are certified for nurses, nutritionists, massage therapists, and other licensed health professionals. But, you know, those classes are also available to anyone. You don't have to be a licensed health professional to take them. So we have a free webinar available now called Magnificent Midwife Woman. If you click on that, you'll see where to sign up for it. We have one about the Natural Guide to Great Sex. That's an on-ground meeting in West Palm Beach, and that's coming up this week. That's based on the book I wrote, The Natural Guide to Great Sex, which is also available on our website under books. Then I will be at Earth Save Miami free vegan dinner, and we'll be talking about herbals and nutritional supplements to keep vegans thriving, including those things that you might want to watch for in terms of nutritional deficiencies. We're also having a free class called The Eyes Have It, Eye Health Naturally, where you can take it for free, but you do need to sign up. We also have an on-ground lecture at the Nature Club in Deerfield Beach, where we'll be talking about wild, edible, and medicinal plants that grow in southern Florida. Then we have a class about dowsing, measuring the interacting energy fields for health balance. That's on ground in Deerfield Beach, Florida. And then we have a three-week series, which is live webinar online, so you can take that from anywhere. It's called The Scientific Validation of Botanical Medicine, and it'll be the latest research about how to safely and effectively use herbs for yourself and your family. That's open to anyone. We have the Florida Herbal Conference coming up. That's on ground in February. And the 13th Annual Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Cancer Therapy on ground in West Palm Beach. Then online in March, we have our yearly conference, which sells out. It is online, and it is a course on herbal certification. So you are certified through the Florida School of Holistic Living as having taken this course when you're done with it. It's a four-class series, and that starts in March, but we are already getting very filled with people who are registering for that class. So all kinds of things, you can join us. We'd love to have you with us, and just go to naturalnurse.com calendar or sign up for the newsletter to get announcements about the classes. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest Dr. Joel Fuhrman. He's done many, many things, but he's also the author of the book we'll be talking about today, Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. Dr. Fuhrman is a board-certified family physician, nutritional researcher, and six-time New York Times bestselling author. He is the president of the Nutritional Research Foundation, and he has authored many research articles published in mainstream medical journals. He's also on the faculty of Northern Arizona University Health Science Division. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Fuhrman.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Oh, good. You're coming through loud and clear. Thank you so much for being here. Now, you know, what about this book? You've been doing this such a long time, but let me ask you this. Going back in time, why did you want to become a physician?
You know, I had this love for nutrition when I was younger, and I was on the world figure skating team. I was a competitive athlete, and we tried to eat healthy to increase our performance and sustain our hard workouts without getting overtraining or getting sick. But in any case, I was studying nutrition as a teenager and young adult. And through my studies and interest, I realized that most of the issues that plague Americans, causing incredible tragedy, you know, kidney failure, strokes, heart attacks, cancers, are the result of nutritional stupidity and addiction to processed foods. And I felt, and I have this passion and realized that, what the medical profession, treating people with drugs for what are nutritionally caused illnesses, just put more toxic and carcinogenic poisons into people's body and just looks at the symptoms but doesn't get rid of the cause. And the miraculous self-healing body we have has, you know, enables us to get rid of autoimmune disease like lupus and psoriasis. And
okay, but Dr. Furman, wait a minute. So yes, I understand what you're saying. But what I'm asking is, you know, when you went into medicine and when you went to medical school, these issues were not what was being taught, I don't believe, because it still is not being taught. So, you know, how was it that you went through that conventional training?
But you asked me why I went into medicine and why I went into
right.
this. And I was explaining that I had this passion, and that's why I went to medical school.
That's
I
amazing.
Already had developed it. Yeah, I went to medical school with a specific intent of being a physician who would not be treating people, who would be removing their drugs and being available for people who wanted to make miraculous recoveries through changing their, through excellent nutritional and natural methods, setting them free from being in that medical merry-go-round of drugs, side effects, and medical tragedies. And I've developed, so I went to do, so what I'm doing with my career, I went to medical school with that specific intent because I developed a passion for that when I was younger. You know,
so amazing.
Yes, I went through conventional medical training and became a board-certified family physician with knowing all the while that that information is important to be able to wean people off drugs. But not
wow.
to utilize drugs as this therapeutic modality, but to be able to understand how to get people gradually less dependent and to remove their dependency for those drugs. And occasionally, I have to prescribe medications for a maybe period of time or to maintain medications. So it's good I have that training, but in most cases, I'm enabling people to come off their medications and get make complete recoveries.
So I think that is fantastic because a lot of young people, both in terms of going to nursing school or going to conventional medical school, tell me, because I do a lot of career counseling in how to have a career in natural health, that they don't want to go to conventional medical school or even nursing school because the training is so drug-focused and they are afraid that their views will be put down by instructors. Did you just, like I did for nursing school, because I was an herbalist since 1964, I didn't become a nurse till 73, so I did it for the same reasons as you, to get the medical knowledge but to maintain the natural practice, and that's very unusual. Did you get a lot of pushback from your professors, or did you just keep it to yourself, figure you'll get the degree, and then you'll have the power to do the kind of interventions you believe in and know are true?
I did not keep it to myself. I was made chairperson of the nutritional education department at University of Pennsylvania. I was put on the University of Pennsylvania Medical School Admissions Committee. So I did research at Penn, you know, in nutrition, and most of my colleagues and professors and doctors there would say to me, yeah, we know that's true. We know that's very effective, but it's very hard to get your patients to do that. You're not going to make enough money doing that, and it's much easier just to give a person a drug. In other words, they wouldn't, you know, we'd have respectful debates, but of course I'd always say that that's not giving people informed consent. Can't paternalistically make people's decisions for them. It doesn't matter what small percent of people will or will not do it. That speaks to the lack of art, motivational skills, and education you're doing in the way you're convincing patients. And I would have these communities, arguments and debates with people, holding my ground and actually convincing a lot of people. And in my medical school class, for example, multiple physicians who are in practice now for 20 to 30 years have reported to me how much knowing me and learning from me has changed their career and their personal health and the way they practice medicine. And very grateful for that opportunity, you see, to even just have had that experience when I was in medical school with them.
Wow, that is just amazing. What a wonderful model. And how is it that this is many years ago, you did not just become a doctor, that the information that you are saying is totally true and was already proven evidence-based, how is it that we are still continuing with this drug treatment model at this point in time?
Well, that's a loaded question, you know, because obviously we have the growth of the fast food industry and the processed food industry in the 50s and 60s, the explosion in the 1970s, the billion-dollar drug industry and the drug-medical complex having the most effect in combined with the processed food industry and the animal food industry on dictating American healthcare policy. And, of course, then the addictive nature of foods that make people addicted to them, so they can't even think straight or think logically of how self-destruction is being wrought on our population. Right now, we have 1 in 5 Americans mentally ill as a result of the processed food industry, and nobody even thinks it's the processed food industry. They just think it's that the explosion from 1 in 100 cases of mental illness 100 years ago to 1 in 5 is just like luck, or people don't even think anymore because they're so addicted to their processed food. So there's obviously a huge economic incentive and huge economic dollars spent to promote our present system. The small amount of people like you and me screaming from the rooftops are having an effect, and eventually the reality gets out to a lot of people, but it's still a very small percent of our population. Right now we still have over 80% of our population, actually closer to 90%, are overweight and sickly.
And also on, you know, polypharmacy. How many people are on not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 medications and have never been told that their illness is linked to what they put in their mouth and in their mind?
Yeah, I was thinking that when you were starting to say about going to nursing school and medical school and learning about drugs, because I was thinking in my own head that it's absolutely essential, because almost every person you see with problems is on multiple medications with interactions and multiple drug interactions and side effects. And you have to know how to utilize those drugs to get them off the drugs, which ones to take off, which ones have to wean slowly, which ones you can stop right away, which ones cause weight gain, which ones cause weight loss. You know, what I'm saying is that it's very complicated now seeing sickly patients because they're on so many medications, as you just mentioned. And you have to be a physician with the ability to prescribe medications, even to be able to lower their drugs gradually. You can't just stop them suddenly, you know.
That's right. So important. Now, also, another course I teach to pharmacists and physicians is drug nutrient depletions, because almost every one of those pharmaceuticals also interfere with either the body's ability to manufacture or use nutrients. And when we look at the adverse effect profile of those drugs, they very often mirror what a nutrient deficient would look like.
Well, we're agreeing that it's a complicated issue, but the American diet is grossly insufficient and deficient in micronutrients and phychochemicals, leading to, of course, free radical production, reactive oxygen species, and driving up hormones that age us and create cancer. So we have, you know, every time we metabolize a calorie or eat a food, we create oxidative effects that ages us. But natural plants have phytochemicals and antioxidants in them that prevent the formation and remove the buildup of the reactive oxygen species. So drugs add a more toxic overlay on top of the already toxic diet people are eating. And the suppression of symptoms with drugs, either natural herbs or medicinal drugs, are because of their toxic effects. In other words, the pharmacologic effects are the toxins, either natural or pharmacologically or chemically derived, and people look to suppress symptoms as opposed to removing cause. And when you remove cause and establish nutritional excellence, sometimes people are going to feel poorly for a week or so, because it doesn't suddenly work the minute you start start fueling the body with the correct nutritive input. It takes time to build up the nutrients in the tissues and get rid of the buildup of metabolic waste products. So it's sometimes complicated, and that combined with the addictive nature for food and the absolute complete nutritional ignorance that permeates our society, people are brainwashed with the incorrect information, makes this, you know, at times difficult for the average person in the street being bombarded with conflicting and dangerous messaging to know what to do, you know, so it's confusing for people.
Well, you lay all of this out so well with so many facts and really easy to read, and that is in your book, Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. And I would say, even though it is vastly, vastly referenced with your notes in the back, that it's written in a way that you don't need a medical degree to read and understand this book.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I have written, you may know, I've written 12 books, and most of my books have been self-help books, like The End of Dieting, How People Can Lose Weight and Stay Slim and Get Rid of Their Food Addictions, The End of Diabetes and The End of Heart Disease. And then The Fast Food Genocide was actually a lot of work, years of work, putting that book together. And, of course, it's not as big a seller as my other best New York Times bestsellers because the self-help books and the weight loss and dieting books get more play still. But I'm very proud and excited about this book, Fast Food Genocide, because I feel that if people learn the information in this book, it's really going to open their eyes to what's happening to themselves and, of course, to our country and to vulnerable populations. And we have to work together to really change where we've headed. It's just, you know, it's crazy. And it's a great story. And it's a great, and knowing the history of food and how it's affected the history of our country and how, and the potential for further destruction moving forward, it's just a very, very important message, I think, for our country.
Yes. And you reference, like, so many just recent studies. Like, you're even looking at a study by the CDC, right? That vegetable and fruit consumption is lower in southern states, even though they grow so much of it. I mean, why are people just eating all this fast food?
Well, the food, the calories from oil, and I think the biggest scam perpetrated on our modern world is people believe that oil, like olive oil and flaxseed, you know, oils and coconut oil or this oil or that oil is a health food when it's all 120 calories a pound. And though one oil may not be as bad as another oil, they're all fattening and void of fiber and nutrients, essentially. And when people think it's healthy, they're pouring oil on their food as if it's health food. But what I'm saying right now is that when you heat oil at high temperature, you cause rancid carcinogenic compounds. And also the oils that go into the bloodstream very rapidly, and the rapid ingestion of calories, just like the rapid ingestion of sugar and honey and maple syrup. In other words, whether it's white flour, white rice, sweeteners, or oil, the calories that flood the bloodstream so rapidly signal dopamine stimulation in the brain, leading to addictive thoughts and addictive behaviors, craving and seeking out concentrated calories and overeating. And you take any animal take a rat or a monkey or a bird, you give them their natural diet or you give them these frankenfoods made with oil and sugar and flour and fried foods, and they'll stop eating whatever natural diet they were supposed to be eating, and they'll eat these concentrated calories until they become obese, until they kill themselves or commit suicide with food, because of malnutrition. You know, we're talking about excessive calorie malnutrition, because calories...
That is a good term. I want you to say that again, yeah. Because that it's almost like they don't go together, and yet they do.
Right. It's excessive calorie malnutrition. Whereas the opposite, the only thing proven to slow aging and extend lifespan to make people, to enable us to live 100 years old without cancer, only one thing, and that's moderate caloric restriction in an environment of micronutrient excellence. So we have to eat foods with a high micronutrient density to be able to reduce our apostat, control our cravings to overeat calories, and to enable the immune system to protect us against cancer and dementia. Our brain is a jelly bag of fat, and it goes rancid and gets rotten when we don't take in a high antioxidant exposure through life, and we become demented and we get damage to the brain, and people are confused. Why do people get out Alzheimer's and demented, and why are they getting brain tumors, and why are they getting all these diseases? They are, and why are they depressed, and why do we have mental illness? In other words, they think, you get overweight and diabetic when you eat bad, but they don't see how it's destructive to the brain. They don't put two and two together how the brain is so sensitive to what we eat and all the mental illness and all the violence and all the psychosis that's been exploding in our society, combined with the explosion of strokes and dementia, is all related to the foods we put in our body. And we have the answer. I always say we've landed the man on the moon already. What I mean by that is we know how to win the war on cancer right now. We know how to stop dementia and strokes right now. But people don't like the answer we found. They're looking for a magic pill when the answer is right in front of their nose. The answer is right here in front of our noses.
And isn't it wonderful as a physician? Because certainly, like you said, you were interested in health and wellness and healing. From that, when people do follow your guidance, you see them get better. I remember one time you know, I've seen our colleagues go, it's very frustrating being a doctor. For instance, Dr. Alan Gaby said this once to me, that really telling people that there's no cure, you can just manage your disease and watch them get more and more ill, is not very satisfying. Well, if people follow your recommendations, you see them get healthy. It's fantastic.
That's correct. And reversing diabetes, heart disease, and autoimmune diseases has been the most rewarding part of my career. And, you know, I just to let you know, too, I opened up a retreat in California where I can take the sickest, most overweight food addicts, and by putting them in a safe, beautiful environment, feeding them gourmet food that's healthy with my three fantastic chefs, I can even take people who no way can they do this on their own. They're just too addicted. Their environment is too, they don't have the ability to like read a book or watch the videos or study the works and change their diet. And but once they're there for a few months, their whole attitude changes, their mental outlook on life changes, their food preference and taste preference changes. And once they're away from their addictive food consumption triggers for long enough, they can then stick with it. So I've increased the opportunity and I've increased the probability I can take almost any patient in a very serious condition and nurse them back to superior health, even if they can't do it on their own, even if they don't have the ability or they're so addicted they can't make the changes by themselves. So I have both, you know, I'm removing the obstacles, obviously. You know, I do my books and videos and teleconferences and podcasts and events, and, you know, I travel and speak at medical conferences and health conferences. And I even my television shows on PBS have motivated and changed the lives of hundreds of thousands of Americans. But I always knew that there's always this percent of people that feel they can't do that and they can't get enough help. So I opened up this place in, obviously, in a facility where they can go live there for a month or two or three and get their health back and get rid of their food addictions and drop 50 to 70 pounds. So I'm doing that.
That reminds, yeah. What's the name of that retreat center, Dr. Furman?
It's the Eat to Live Retreat. I use the name of my most best-selling book, Eat to Live. So I call it the Eat to Live Retreat. And people can get information on my website about it. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun because, like you were saying, like I had a person there just come in, let's say in September. So in September and October, he had chest pain and he was 370 pounds and he couldn't walk or even move around because he was so unstable with his heart. And he lost 50 pounds the first 2 months, and then he went home and he lost 20 pounds when he went home. So he lost 70 pounds in the first 3 months. And of course, now he's moving around, exercising without chest pain, running up, you know, moving up, you know, he's literally, you know, he's still overweight. He still has a long way to go, of course. But he could have never done that and never really learned that he could enjoy this and keep the process going on his own, that we, you know, gave him the skills and the abilities to while he was there. So it's just one episode, one exciting transformation that really makes my career so rewarding, as you can imagine, watching these people gain their health back.
Isn't it? I love that. That's my favorite thing about being in holistic medicine is watching people get well. And, you know, it seems simple, but why is there this very, you know, great difficulty in people changing their diets? We're going to take a little break right here on the Progressive Radio Network, Dr. Furman. And when we come back, we will be continuing our discussion with Dr. Joel Furman, medical doctor, author of Fast Food Genocide and 14 other books, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for the over 300,000 people who are downloading our podcast. We'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com or Facebook The Natural Nurse. Our guest today is Dr. Joel Furman, board-certified physician, nutritional researcher, and six-time New York Times best-selling author, with many of his books, such as Eat to Live, and we're talking about his newest book, Fast Food Genocide, How Processed Food is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. Thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Furman.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Now, what is your website? Because you mentioned that your retreat is listed there, and I'm sure, you know, there's lots of other information there. So what's the best place for people to find you?
Well, my website is simply, of course, drfurman.com. You know, and
okay,
that's drfurman.com. And my, you know, obviously I want to give people a lot of information, recipes, remove the obstacles for their healing and make them learn a lot. But of course, if they want to learn more about the retreat, they can just slash the, you know, at Dr. Furman, there's a tab that says retreats. They can click on that and get more information.
Yes, and so on there, they can find out about your retreat center, your other books, and talk about recipes. This book, Fast Food Genocide, is loaded with delicious-sounding recipes. But, you know, I actually sent out a little Facebook post yesterday about the fact that in terms of clients that I see, most of them do not ever cook. I mean, some of them don't have a pot. Every single thing they either eat out or bring in pre-prepared food, which has a paragraph of toxic chemicals on it.
Yeah, I know that we have a very sickly population and an explosion of processed foods and fast food in this country. And, you know, we want to remove the obstacles so people can make this easy. And we teach them how to, you know, make a salad dressing and maybe a pot of vegetable bean soup on the weekend and have to have it last for the whole week. So you have your lunch is just, you know, a salad and a bowl of vegetable bean soup and some fresh fruit. At least make the lunch
a very natural and healthy meal. You're out of the house. You're tempted by things around you. You want to sustain yourself with a hearty lunch. And, of course, you know, we want our breakfast and dinner to be lighter anyway. We don't want to go to bed on a heavy stomach and a heavy meal at night. So it's better to enter. So if you need a really hearty and healthy lunch with a bean soup or a chili and a bowl, you know, and a nice big salad with a dressing made from nuts and seeds, that it's really worth putting that work into that. And, of course, you know, I offer people, if they want it, healthy dressings and healthy soups and things like that and sauces to cook vegetables. But, you know, but learning how to make structure your life and come up with a business plan of when you're going to cook, when you're going to exercise, when you're going to shop, you know, so it's just critically important. You have to have a plan of how you're going to make your life healthy. It can't be haphazard, and you can't just shop and buy fast food and processed foods, because then it's just making your life too miserable.
I think that's so true. And one thing that I do is really I only do my most food preparation on one day a week. And then I put in my refrigerator grab-and-go bags, and I never leave the house without food. And I think that is a really good routine, because that way you're not stuck outside where you're going to run in for a fast food bagel. I personally have never been to a fast food establishment in my life, ever. So I know, I'll take that back. I have used the bathrooms at McDonald's. They're always clean as I travel across the country. But I never have eaten anything in any of those places.
I think that I've never eaten in any of those places either in my adult life. I can remember when I was younger, maybe when I was a kid, having something in one of those places as a teenager, and, you know, but never a couple of times, but never in my, you know, in my adult life have I ever eaten any fast food either.
So what do you do? You travel, you lecture all over the country. You have a busy schedule. What do you do on the road?
I generally get off the plane and drive to the nearest Whole Foods market, fill up on a salad bar with beans. I get some frozen artichoke hearts, and I get a bag of jackfruit or frozen berries. I bring nuts and seeds and a mixed oatmeal, my Familia, without the, you know, low sugar Familia in my bag. I have my healthy nut bars, and I carry nuts and seeds with myself. I have pistachio nuts in my bag. I have plenty of great tasting food. You know, I have some maybe oranges or whatever, you know, whatever kind of fruit I want to take with me. I just, the back of my knapsack has my food in. I'll make a roasted portobello that's roasted. I'll put it in a whole grain Ezekiel pita or an Ezekiel bread, and I'll put like a garlic nutter. I'll make roasted garlic with cashews and hemp seeds with a little soy milk whipped up. And I'll put some maybe basil in it to make a pesto for the dressing for the bread. I'll put lettuce and tomato and red onion on there, maybe some sprouts, the portobello mushroom, maybe some avocado, seal the bread up, wrap it in silver foil, put it in my bag. In other words, I'm traveling with great tasting food. I enjoy the delicious food I've made, and then I go to a Whole Foods market, buy some more foods from my room, and I eat out of the refrigerator in the room, you know, the salad bar or going there for, and then do the business I have to do and stay on my healthy plan. In other words, once you're committed, you just do what you have to do. If you don't have food that you feel is healthy, you don't have to eat. You know, just don't eat.
You know what? It's not hard. And I do exactly the same thing as you. When I'm traveling, I actually plan ahead, and my first stop is Whole Foods, just like you. And then I always get a room and insist that there's a refrigerator in the room. So I have some place to put some of the foods, you know, extra salads for the next few days. It's really not that hard. And you know what? You save a lot of money as well.
And you save a lot of time. You can get work done. You can waste so much time in restaurants. And I'm busy when I'm traveling. I got work to do. I got meetings to go to. I got lectures to give. And I can't be sitting there in a restaurant to eat a junky meal for spending 2 hours sitting in a restaurant. You know, I have the food in my room. I have the refrigerator in my room, same as you. And I just, I could work very efficiently and get work done.
Isn't it great? So, you know, we're both saying this is not undoable. It's not someone else can do it. You can do it. And what is this word? I've never heard this word before, but it's a great word. Nutritarian diet. That is your word, Dr. Furman. And what does that mean?
You know, the question is there one ideal way of eating that can maximize lifespan and maximally prevent cancer, that's rich in phytochemicals and antioxidants, hormonally favorable, and doesn't miss any of the nutrients humans need to maximize human lifespan? So a nutritarian diet is trying to be very comprehensively complete with the full portfolio of anti-cancer foods. And of course, as you move the diet to be heavier in plants that extend longevity, to make sure you're not missing any nutrients that could interfere with your longevity, like DHA or B12 or zinc. Or, you know, so it's a very comprehensive approach. So my nutritarian diet, I feel, should be held up as the gold standard of nutritional excellence, that people could strive to perfect their diet that way. And when you do so, and when you start to get that full exposure to phytochemicals, it naturally enables you to control your appetite. You don't want as much food. The high nutrient levels and the high fiber have had feedback on the hypothalamus to make you no longer a food-consuming monster. You know, so, and you feel so much better, and you can think clearly, and it keeps you emotionally stable, and it slows the aging process. So a lot of, you know, dietary models and hypotheses out there, but I'm adamant that this nutritarian approach is the most scientifically supported approach in a comprehensive sense to maximize human health.
Yeah, it's a great word with the focus on nutrition. And how would you, if people move to eating this way, for instance, something like DHA, how would people be getting sufficient DHA? And do you suggest they get an EPA DHA blood level drawn? Because most physicians don't do that.
Well, I do recommend people take a vegan EPA and DHA supplement. I do recommend that, as I think the amount of seafood you would need to eat to assure EPA and DHA adequacy is not lifespan favorable, because it would raise your IGF-1 too high and expose you to probably too many contaminants. So I'm not trying to establish the dietary model to supply the EPA DHA, but once you're but you don't need that much. And if you're supplementing with, let's say, for example, a 250 milligrams of EPA and DHA a day, I did a study on the Nutritional Research Foundation funded a study. I didn't do the study, but I'm the president of the Nutritional Research Foundation, and we funded a study on 166 vegans who were not consuming any DHA EPA source, and we found that 66% were insufficient or deficient. 27% were severely deficient, dangerously so, that would have led to later life dementia if not remedied. And when we started to supplement the groups that were insufficient and deficient, we found that just a small amount normalized their omega-3 index. So I don't think it's essential that people get the blood test if they're supplementing appropriately. But if they're if they're like adamant about not taking a supplement, and they're in that 20% that maybe wouldn't have to, then they could get a blood test to at least assure DHA and EPA adequacy. I would think it's very irresponsible and to just not to take EPA and DHA, not to eat any seafood or high fatty acid seafood, and to just think that your levels are adequate while you get older and your brain shrinks due to deficiency. So I want to be more cautious and proactive here, but I do think that as we advocate people move towards a more plant-based diet, they should just take the EPA and DHA supplement.
So let me ask you this. I'm really interested in your opinion. As you know, more recently on the market is actually a prescription EPA-DHA supplement. And some people are choosing that because, well, they say it's free. It's not really free, but it's covered by health insurance. What do you think of those particular offerings by the pharmaceutical companies?
I think they're too strong. It's too high of a dose, which can lower triglycerides and have some blood thinning effects. But when you're taking that high a dose, you're taking a more pharmacologic dose, not a nutritive dose, and that pharmacologic dose could have effects to reduce immunity and increase risk of prostate cancer, and even promote something like atrial fibrillation, whereas deficiency or excess can cause your instability of the heart. So I'm more cautious and conservative in my use of that, and not to use such a high concentrated dose of an EPA, except when people have like depression or an autoimmune condition like ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease, then I do look for a high EPA supplement, sometimes pharmaceutical grade, that can have suppressive effects on the immune system to help the recovery in the autoimmune disease, because it help reduce the drug use. So I wouldn't recommend it for the general population.
Okay, great, great information, because some of my customers are saying they want to use that one rather than the supplement because of the fact that insurance covers it because it's a prescription pharmaceutical. So that was a really wonderful and balanced answer. Now, of course, you threw out the word addiction a couple times, and addiction is a big buzzword. You hear it on the news lately because of the addiction that's going on in our culture, but you're talking about it in terms of fast food. I mean, how do people even realize that it is an addiction?
Well, the whole population is addicted. You let them just stop eating fast food and just eat a few salads for a few meals. Let them just eat healthy for the next day of just fruits and vegetables and see how lousy they feel and how much they crave their sugar and their salt and their cheeses, you know, and their oils. In other words, they'll feel fatigued and shaky and weak and headachy, and they don't. So it's a physical addiction, because when you're in the phase when you're not digesting calories, while you're digesting calories in the anabolic process of putting calories into the body, your body no longer can repair and heal and detoxify and remove toxic compounds as effectively. So you feel better when you're not removing toxins. But then when you finish digestion and you start to go into a detox mode and self-repair mode, people on an unhealthy diet eating toxic food feel they can't stand the way they feel, and they have to eat again to stop the sensation of fatigue and mental and fog and brain fog and anxiety and even withdrawal depression that ensues. So they're forced to overeat calories and keep eating junk food. If they weren't an addict, they would feel nothing when they didn't eat food, and they'd be able to comfortably eat some salad and some string beans, you know, and a head of broccoli and a handful of sunflower seeds and feel great. But they don't. But if a week later of feeling lousy, they're going to start to lose those addictive drives, and over time, their taste buds are going to be enhanced. And I'm just giving you a small part of the addictive process. That's the withdrawal process. There's also the part of dopamine stimulation from the calories going into the bloodstream fast that gives them that central nervous system high, making them dopamine insensitive now over time, wanting more stimulation of the brain, leading to alcoholism and drug addiction. So two things. Number one, fast food and commercial baked goods like croissants and donuts and cookies are linked to major depression in dose-dependent manner, and even two servings a week increases risk of developing depression by 50%, actually 51%. That's number one. And number two, when you take in these foods and you're eating more of these fast foods and processed foods, they increase your risk of opiate addiction and the propensity for illegal drug use and criminal behavior. In other words, what I'm saying right now is a link between sugar and junk food and illegal drug use is solid, and it's more solid than the link between poverty, social isolation, or bad parents or lack of parents, and drug use or illegal drug use. The biggest relationship between and the biggest factor linked with illegal drug use is the consumption of candy and processed foods in childhood. So we destroy the brain when we eat foods that don't contain antioxidants and phytochemicals, and we destroy the brain not just with dementia, but we increase the risk of lower the risk of attention. We increase the risk of attention deficits, poor learning, poor behavior, increased propensity for anger, poor performance in school, and we strip people of their chance to reach economic prosperity and realize the American dream and be happy and healthy when we feed them foods that don't have micronutrients in them.
That is so true. And we're going to take another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so you can hear about some of the other shows that you can catch on Progressive Radio Network. And when we come back, we're going to continue our fascinating discussion with Dr. Joel Fuhrman, medical doctor, author of Fast Food Genocide and many other writings. And we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Hey, it's Jesse, PRN station manager. I have an exciting announcement for our amazing listeners. PRN has a new voicemail line that will allow you to connect better with our host. If you can't listen live but have a question or comment for one of our hosts, just call 862-800-6805. That's 862-800-6805. This feature will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show.
Thank you for listening to the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Gary Null, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information. The kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one Progressive Radio Network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis. And there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We are talking today with actually world-renowned author and scientist, Dr. Gerald Furman, medical doctor. And we're talking today about how processed food is killing us and what we can do about it. Fast Food Genocide is the name of the book. Now, Dr. Furman, you brought up just very briefly about children. How is it that you go to a restaurant and they say kids menu and all it ever is this horrible, completely nutritional deficient SAD, standard American diet food? How is that possible?
Fried cancer-causing foods.
Yes.
And we're the only country in the world, we're the only country, no, not Europe, not the Arab countries, not Israel, no, almost nowhere else do we allow a class 1 or a class 2A carcinogen declared by the World Health Organization in processed meats and hot dogs be fed to children in schoolrooms and cafeterias and schools. Oh, we're the only country that permits it. And then, but you know why? It has to do with the food, the addictive nature of food and the ability and the cognitive dissonance. That means that these parents are such addicts and so addicted to the dangerous foods that they know they have no interest or ability to see the damage that it's doing to themselves, and they're blind to the damage it's causing their children. The children we love and want to have a good world for them, a lot of people are completely oblivious and blindfolded to the effect of how the danger of what they're putting in their child's mouth and how you are seeding the ground for cancer, autoimmune conditions, mental illness, and brain deficiencies when the child grows. It's just, it's insanity. And when you're a child, your DNA is not wound, like the DNA is normally wound up tightly, like the rubber band in a golf ball. But when you're growing, the rubber bands unravel themselves and spread themselves out and are more easily damaged. And that's where we set the stage for later life disease and later life damage like cancer by feeding children these kid-friendly menus. And so this is exactly the point we're talking about. Nutritional education should be part of the educational process in grade school and, you know, in elementary school and right through the educational process. It should be reading, writing, arithmetic, and nutritional science because it's the one most critical knowledge that's important for our health destiny and for our success in the educational field, our ability to not be depressed and to control our from getting tragic diseases. So parents have no idea how they are the destructive influence, bringing donuts to soccer games, and your kid runs around the baseball field for 15 minutes, sitting there holding a mitt, and he comes back and you feed him a cheese doodle or something, or a donut hole. It's incredibly sick and dangerous, and the parents have no idea. They just think, oh, it's kids are enjoying food, and it's, you know, it's the way everybody eats. And my daughters used to say to me when they were little kids, they could never understand how parents would be doing these things that were destructive to their own children. They would say to me, don't these parents love their children? Why are they bringing this stuff to them? And I'm saying, well, they don't know what they love their children. They just don't know what we know. They say to me, well, how could they be so stupid? How do people not know that putting junk in your body gives you what makes you unhealthy? Don't they know that you get made of that your body becomes the food, that the foods you eat make who you are and what your body becomes? The quality you put in better food, you get healthier, you get a healthier body. Can't they know that? And I said, well, they're just not thinking about it because everybody else does it. You know, they're completely oblivious to it. And my kids could never understand. They could never grasp how people could do that to their children. Because it seems so strange to them that people couldn't rationalize that what they eat makes who they are.
It really is. You know, to me, at times, I think it's a little bit even more diabolical when we research that very often the same corporations that own the fast food companies also own the pharmaceutical companies, also own the pesticide and herbicide manufacturers that's dumped on the foods on the farms. And, you know, they kind of all feed into each other in terms of increasing profits.
Well, I'm glad that we're discussing this and there's a growing awakening of our population about organic food, about eating more vegetables, about G-bombs, and that's my acronym, G-bombs, which stands for greens and beans and onions and mushrooms and berries and seeds. And I have thousands of people signed up in my Nutritarian Women's Health Study, studying the protective effects on breast cancer from eating a diet rich in these anti-cancer foods. And we have a growing number of people, including physicians. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine now, and I'm one of the founding members, you know, has grown from a group of 30 physicians to 30,000 physicians getting, you know, now with a board certification exam and now with, so now, you know, in other words, we're seeing an explosion in people that are more knowledgeable and working to undo. But it's a big fight. It's a slow process, and we're all part of it, you know.
But there is more availability than when I started. You know, when I started in 1964, you actually had less access, let's say, to organic food because the awareness wasn't there. But people are voting when they wake up with their dollars, and they're often choosing better choices. And truthfully, to eat according to your recipes in your book is very inexpensive. You're talking about cabbage. You're talking about the green bomb. These are not expensive things. Onions, mushrooms, seeds. You don't have to spend any more than you would on a junk food diet.
Right. I mean, certain things are a little bit more money, but it balances itself out. And you know, the interesting thing is, people think nothing of spending money on themselves when it comes to a car or a watch, but when it comes to food, which determines their health, and they'll give half their paycheck to medical care, by the way. But the idea that they should spend a little more on what they eat because which protects our health for our future and gives us and makes us happy and keeps us healthy and not aging fast, and it's such an insane preference. But in other words, we can make this diet taste great. Because people were thinking, they're listening to you and me talk, and they're thinking to themselves, yeah, eating, you know, they're probably right, and that's probably important, but I can't do that because I don't want to give up my pleasure. I'd rather die a little younger and eat what I want to eat, enjoy my life more. See, that's their addictions talking. They have these rationalizations in their own brain that don't make any sense, and they're not true, because a healthy diet doesn't taste less flavorful, and your body gets used to what you're eating, and you like what you're used to eating. I like what I eat just as much as a person eating an unhealthy diet likes what they eat. It just takes time to adjust your food preferences and learn the recipes. So it's not decreasing pleasure, but they'll think that, or they'll say that, or they'll come up with a million excuses, because the addictive mind is not logical. Once you're an addict, logic and science are no longer driving behavior. It's feelings and emotions and maintaining your addiction that is affecting a lot of your thoughts. And this is why, you know, this is why the difficulty. But everything you're saying is true.
that we have a growing army of people, both physicians and a big movement in society that's starting to make inroads and make eating healthy easier. But it's still a big fight for a lot of people to get rid of their addictions and to realize this is the way they have to go. And we got to get.
Well, thank you so much, Doctor, for being our guest today. We're actually at the end of our time together. You do want to check out Dr. Furman's website. That's drfurman.com, or visit us online at naturalnurse.com. You can find our radio archives on PRN, which will have a link to Dr. Furman, and you can let any of your friends listen to this show anytime because we are on the archive. You can leave us a message at 646-918-6619 for the voicemail, and you can join us anytime at naturalnurse.com. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Furman. Thank you so much for listening to us, all our podcast and on-air listeners. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.